Hello, everybody, and welcome to the June 3rd, 2015 edition of Weekly Manga Recap, which a fairly reliable source informed me is our 200th episode. Yay.
I was actually wrong in that calculation, Nick.
A fairly not at all reliable.
Yeah, I looked at it closer. I forgot we did that one episode about fan fiction or shipping that went never fully kept. So
welcome to the 201st episode of Weekly Mockery.
No, we're not counting that one. So no, we are back to 200.
Oh, 200 again.
Yeah. I know it's going to be hard for you to pick
true
up that enthusiasm.
Of asterisks. And decisions over which ones counted and did not. We're at 200 officially.
We're like Star Wars now. There's different levels of canonicity among episodes of Weekly Manga Recap.
We should just continue to manipulate this stuff and then just celebrate stuff whenever we want. You know, 2 weeks later we'll be like, welcome to the 300,000th episode of Weekly Manga Recap.
Yeah, I'm like, it counts every time. Every minute we're streaming is really like its own episode, you know, so...
We do go on enough tangents, don't we?
Yeah, like, I break every discussion of a episode, like, every time, like, Bleach this week was its own podcast, and I just cut each series down so we get, like, six episodes a week.
You chose the wrong week in order to have that one whole episode devoted to that.
Nick, I don't know what you're talking about. There is easily enough content in this week's Bleach to talk about for days. Days upon days. Some might say this episode of Bleach was too jammed-packed with things. we have another voice in the room with us, Nick.
Yeah, either it's a ghost or it's a special guest. I don't know.
It's that ghost Campbell, Nick. He's back!
So my stupid cat.
How does one get rid of a ghost camel, exactly?
I don't know. I honestly can't think of a single thing people do with camels. Like, they ride them.
Maybe we could force it to read a poorly written fan fiction, and that'll make it want to leave.
No!
Well, let's wait until the end to do that.
She's the one who's like, oh, wow, I can't wait. You must do part four. It's like, you haven't even seen what I'm making you read for part three yet.
Come on, bondage! I'm ready for this.
Oh, God.
There was a moment, Nick, where things almost went very awkward, because I was saying to her text, I was like, yeah, if you want to read it blind, go ahead, and I don't know how I misspelled it, but my autocorrect made it bound, and I was like, oh god, I'm glad I caught that one, or there had been some weird moments, like, you want me to read it tied up? Like, well, no, but... Let's see where this goes.
50 Shades of World triggered to my heart and death.
Oh man, that would be like, I feel like that should be another one I do at some point where I just rewrite 50 Shades of Grey with fucking Kitoro and Osamu and just occasionally add filthy references into it. Like, I'm just like, man, this inner goddess stuff's great and all, but how about we just get a sloppy puss in there real quick?
Anyway. We are a manga podcast, so I've been told. So we do have manga to talk about this week. Next week we will be going for the definitively NSFW Onani Master Kurosawa. This week, just going to go straight to the recap portion, Weekly Manga Recap, of all of those nice, safe shonen titles where nothing questionable ever happens.
Ever.
I forget if something questionable happened this week. Actually, I think that we picked a fairly tame week to do that, to throw the...
Well, except for Fairy Tail.
Well, that's Fairy Tail, though, you know.
Yeah. But otherwise, no, I think we're pretty much golden this week.
So, let us begin with Black Clover, page 15. Are you still not used to that, Chris? The pages instead of chapters thing?
I think I'm slowly getting more used to it. I just realized, because you know how Stan Lee always says every comic could be someone's first. We actually should make note that Annalisa here is the letterer for Black Clover, the fucking crossover series. For Black Clover and World Trigger. So just to let people know, we've got a pro on our podcast.
Yeah, for those of you who are like, who the hell is this girl? Why does she get to read the new chapter of World Trigger to My Heart and Backdoor? I wanted to do that!
That's why you need a part four, guys!
I need to keep escalating it, though. I need you to help me get in contact with Ashihara himself so that he could read the next one.
Oh, man.
He's just like, my hand hurts so much. Why are you making me read this smut about the characters I've created? They're like
Shut
my
up.
Children.
Keep reading.
I'm like, no, there's a sweet Digimon reference coming up. Keep going. All right, so Black Clover.
Black Clover has nothing to do with any of that. Last time we left off, it seemed that Luck was up against the ropes, going up against this mysterious person from the Kingdom of Diamonds. Smoky Dude, with the creepy...
Lotus!
Smoky Dude, with
okay,
the creep.
Smoky Dude.
Smoky Dude. Okay, so, but fortunately, Asta and Noel came to Luck's rescue, and so, just when it seemed like Luck was completely immobile, was restrained by the smoke, and was not going to be able to win, Asta comes in and acts all, I am trying to be Naruto, but not quite yet. Luck tries to actually reject Asta's help, and he remembers when his mother died, confirming that the woman who was instructing him in flashbacks in the last chapter was indeed his mother, and he continued to smile even at her death, which of course caused many people to go, God, he's so creepy. I always knew he was creepy, but Jesus, he's creepy. And now, basically after that, Luck decided that the one thing that he could continue to offer her was to just win and win and win and keep on winning and offer his victories to his mother. And so he tries to reject Asta's help, rushes forward to attack again, and of course Asta is like, well, I don't give a crap, I'm gonna save you anyway. And he says the very shonen thing of, fine, do whatever you want, but I'm also going to do what I want, which means I'm going to help you. So, yeah. He said, fine, we won't help you, but I will help you, because that is how shonen people talk.
It's a bit strange. I didn't realize it until right now. But he's basically like, I'm going to win for my mom, I'm going to keep doing it for her. His mom did beat him, is what his
yes.
past seemed to indicate.
He
or at least hit him once in a pivotal point. Was like, why you keep smiling?
He is crazy.
Okay, that's fair enough. I just wanted to confirm. I was like, he devotes it all. Didn't his mom beat him? All right, I just want to make sure I'm on the right page on like where this character's mentality is.
There's also, and I think that that's one of the reasons why you can sort of justify him going, oh, right, I have friends now that I can also rely on and not just think of my mother. And he comes to that decision so very quickly, like in the span of like a page. And so he just kind of privately apologizes to his mother and says, hey, I'm not alone. You know, I can fight together with these two. So it'll still be okay. I don't have to keep on fighting by myself. Makes me think that it's just the mental instability kicking in, and occasionally he just kind of has one of these crazy spurts where he goes, I have to win on my own! And then he comes back to Earth, oh, right, I have friends. As opposed to this actually being a deep character revelation, which...
I think it could be the
latter. I think
it's
meant to be, but this is my interpretation, because he is crazy. So.
I want to see him have to win at everything, like stupid stuff too, not just battle. But like, I don't know, who can eat the most food, and I don't know, stupid stuff.
Like, he's just like, you just see fucking, what's the Magnavox, Magna Swing? Magna Slash. Is that his name?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
The fire guy?
Yeah.
Oh, Lisa, this is your series. Is
oh,
that
God,
his...
no, don't put the pressure on me. What is it? It's Magna... I'm looking it up.
Cheater!
I'm sorry! He hasn't been in it in, like, 10 chapters.
Anyway, I just like to think that Magna, whatever his name is, comes out of the bath. I'm like, look at this huge dump I took!
and
you just see Luck, like, in me, like, deep-throating Chinese food, like, I'll crush you! People are saying it's Swing, Magna Swing.
Okay, whatever. I think I might have been thinking of a Yu-Gi-Oh card. That's usually what happens.
I like that this dude's name is a fucking Yu-Gi-Oh card.
We're just gonna stop calling members of the Black Bulls like their actual names. Just like, okay, and then Celtic Guardian is an idiot and he jumps in to try and save Captain Dark Magician and...
I almost want... That's like my thought process for Luck was when he's doing... he has that, like, thought, like, I've made friends I can count on. Like, he's just like, Asta, Noelle, Naked Chick, Smoky Dude, Annoying Child Thing, and the rest.
So then we cut over to Yuno's group, and Glass's douche is like, why did you come back? You have to go and get to secure the treasure hall for the Clover Kingdom. And Yuno just says, well, let's beat this weird gem guy so we can go and find the treasure together then. And he basically decides to take the kid gloves off and uses two different magic things at the same time, which impresses...
Which looks so cool!
It is a cool panel, and Glass's douche is incredibly impressed by this. Although, it's one of those kind of, it is an impressive thing, just trust me, you know, kind of thing. I know that he is saying two different spells, but that is literally the only thing I have to go on, because we have seen so little of his powers to this point.
They're generally changing it every time they use it. Again, it's the one thing that's sort of weird for me, is that there doesn't seem to be a standard for these things, so the fact that he's using two spells, I'm like, I don't really have much of a context for this, because he seems to do a new spell every single time. And I haven't seen the series long enough of people only using one ability that I'm like, holy shit, two at once! This is cray-cray! You're cray-cray, you know!
So, right after he does that, he makes his declaration, oh, we are going to win stuff. And then we cut back to Asta's group. They are having trouble making their way through the smoke screen that has been summoned around them. Basically, they can't get a beat on the guy, and he keeps on attacking them from cover. So, eventually, Luck just kind of thinks up a plan. He uses his magic sense to blast into the smoke and essentially chases the guy with bursts of lightning magic, which forces him on a certain trajectory, and then Asta comes in and swings his cleaver and hits the guy. He has a wonderful reaction where he's going, huh? While blood is coming out of his mouth. It's rather underreaction-y of him.
It is pretty great, because he's, like, doing this, like, big, like, sweeping back thing, like, ha ha ha, you're using your magic, it's the clumsy way. I have such experience. And he's still, like, flying backwards as the sword hits him, just like, oh!
And it's then explained exactly how this happened. It's a very simple plan, but I don't really know if we needed Naruto graphics to illustrate what happened. Basically, Noelle launched Asta on a trajectory to intercept the guy, and apparently she did so by performing Concho with her wand. I mean, that is what happened, right?
I don't think it's supposed to be up his butt.
But look at his expression. He's going, and she has a pointy object. I know that it's probably like, oh, she used her magic to blast him and stuff, but then why is she suppressing her magic to do it?
Because she's focusing it, because otherwise it would just explode everywhere.
But she did shoot him in the butt at the very least.
No, otherwise Lotus would know what she's doing, because he can sense magic.
That's a very...
I don't know, you're making this a dirty series. This is a pure series.
Well, when you go straight from...
It's not a pure series! Noelle is not wearing pants!
They're just... invisible.
She's like, that's how I protect my modesty, with invisible pants.
They're magic pants. And now I'll just become a murderer.
Look, if someone goes straight from holding up a pointy object to then pointing the pointy object at someone's back end, which caused them to launch forward with a pained expression on their face, I'm going to conclude certain things, okay? Especially because Asta is Naruto the Mage.
It also has the disturbing added effect of the sound effect splash happening on that same page, so if it is Concho, why is splash the sound effect being heard?
Well, she has water magic, which makes it even grosser.
Oh, so she just gave him an enema?
Yes!
That's oh, what this I'm poor saying. Series!
Corrupted forever. You'll never be able to look at this the same way again.
Goodness.
How are you going to make it through this fic? I don't know.
This is tame considered to some of the stuff that's happening in the fic.
So it seems like Lotus has basically been beaten. His arm is clearly broken, and he is bleeding from the mouth. And Luck just goes, wow, teamwork is great. And Noelle is privately congratulating herself. We cut back to Yuno. Glasses Douche is going, how can this be? Well, apparently you didn't help at all. So that's why. And it seems that Yuno has basically been almost completely beaten. He's still got his wind magic out, but it looks not so great anymore. He is bruised literally all over. And the jewel guy has summoned a giant sword. And he concludes the chapter by just saying, be gone! So, clearly it would seem that this guy is more powerful than Lotus. I think. I don't know.
Possibly.
How do power levels work in this series?
He's pretty powerful.
Now, Nick, what did you feel about this chapter overall?
It was weird.
Alisa, how did you feel?
If you take out the concho, how do you feel about this chapter?
It's still kind of weird because Luck immediately just goes, oh, right, I have teammates. Which, I attribute to him being crazy and having actually just forgotten because he's crazy and got carried away. And it shows that there is a tremendous difference between the Golden Dawn and the Black Bulls, and that the Black Bulls are this ragtag group, but despite that, they've got an actual sense of camaraderie to them. Whereas Glasses Douche is just like, individuality, and we are the strongest, so we can afford to be idiots, and that is why I stood here and watched you get beaten, you know. I really hate that guy. He's terrible at his job.
I thought he was going to be evil.
Or Glasses Douche?
Well, because once they introduced the Diamond Kingdom, he's got diamonds on his glasses. So I was like, ho, 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 I feel so clever.
You're like, I'm one step ahead of you, series.
But I think he's actually just happens to have diamonds on his glasses.
It would be a rather, like, straightforward giveaway, wouldn't it?
Yeah, probably.
Like during the Cold War, hey, why do you have a hammer and sickle tattooed onto your forehead? Yeah. It's because I love America.
So why don't you give me all of your American secrets, comrade? I mean, friend.
That voice changed like 3 times in 5 seconds.
You missed it earlier during the Let's Play when my French person turned into fucking Speedy Gonzalez.
Oh, God. How did you do that?
I don't know, but it happened. The one thing I'll say about this, I think it's a bit strange that Locke kind of did seem to get over it, but I feel like that's something you can still continue to develop as this goes along. This did seem to be kind of a big jump forward towards him kind of grasping things together, but as you said, Nick, he still seems like he might be crazy, so it could still work. The only thing that's a bit weird, and it's not the fault of Black Clover, is just that we've seen a similar story to this done, I feel better, in My Hero Academia with Todoroki just recently, where we find out, his mom abused him. He has a very complex relationship with her. But in that one, you got a different impression because he didn't seem to hate his mom, but he still had some kind of grudge against her. In this one, it's just weird. Like, clearly his mom hit him. Presumably maybe beat him.
Pushing him to be the best.
And he has this dedication to her, but I don't see any... He hasn't given us anything yet to be like, oh, okay, well, that's why he still likes her, because, there was this other outside force, something like that. You're like, oh, no, this dude's just fucking batshit, I guess.
Yeah, it gives the impression that his entire worldview is warped because his parental figure treated him this way and only congratulated him when he was victorious. So he equates winning with, love, essentially. So he is seemingly screwed up in the head.
Yeah, and I mean, if you develop it more, if they continue to eventually poke into this, which is something they can absolutely do, I think it can also work a lot.
Well, we'll see, I guess.
Yeah. Can we skip over Bleach? Can I just sum Bleach up as in the Soul King still has a palace? Like, fucking, Yobot's got a castle, part 3?
Well, we have to get at least hit Bleach 628, New World Orders.
I don't have the music. I don't...
There we go. Okay, we're done. Yushiro is back in the series, and there's a joke where Yoruichi senses his presence, says to everyone else there, oh yeah, my brother is here. And they're like, oh, wonder what kind of person he is. And they imagine this big scary dude. And she's like, no, he looks a lot like me. They just imagine a cat carrying a sword. And she's like, no, my human form. That's not my real form. You know this. We had that whole chapter where I showed up and scared Ichigo by showing up all naked in front of him, and it was funny, and we've been trying to rehash that one joke ever since. And that's why I keep on sexually harassing Rima. Does nobody remember this? I'm not a cat. I haven't been a cat for 500 chapters.
You just prefer her as a cat.
Yeah, she was a bit more amusing as a cat, I think.
She was actually, yeah.
She's pretty cool. The cat was pimp. The only thing I didn't get, I was like, why would they assume that her younger brother would look like that, like 8 feet tall?
Because they're all idiots, and Kubo thinks this is funny.
Is Orihime also thinking along that same line of thought?
Well, he does.
Kind of looks like it.
I don't know. It's at least Ichigo, Ganju, and Chad. Oh, wait, no, there is a bit where she... In that first one, she's holding her finger to her chin, so she is also thinking it.
Okay.
So, yeah, Orihime is also stupid. The only thing, like, observation of note that I thought was actually important was the fact that because the entire, you know, palace has been changed so much to suit Juhabak's needs and desires, Yushiro at one point tries to do the whole Soul Reaper, I'm gonna walk on air thing using, you know, Kido stuff. And they're like, oh, well, that means that the reishi here is too high, and so we actually can't do that. That means that the Quincy actually are going to have a tactical advantage of some sort. Also, Dubok says that the new palace is going to be called Vorwelt, and that's it.
According to, again, some German viewers we have, Vorwelt is a very, very, like, horrible butchering of the German translation it's trying to actually get to. But I think we've all kind of known that Kubo doesn't really have a great grasp of other languages.
He was pretty good at
Why
Spanish,
me sad?
He was surprisingly good at the Spanish, actually.
And I just want to point out another one of those instances where, like, people in Bleach just have a really weird way of talking, where it's like, oh, I can't create a foothold for some strange reason, you know. Byakuya is like, it's difficult to create a footing with Reishir. And Reggie responds, why is that? And then Byakuya's response is like, well, I'm sure you already know this, but the reishi density in the atmosphere is quite high.
I just took that as Byakuya just being an arrogant fuckhead.
I like to think he's just like, well, you know the answer, but I'm glad you asked so I can explain it to someone who may not know. No, but no, Bleach this week, or this month, rather, in general, just nothing been happening. I feel like every week for the past 3 weeks has ended with Juhabak is in this big palace being ominous as things approach.
It's kind of funny that at this point in One Piece, the characters are literally stalling. That is what they are doing. They are stalling. Meanwhile, in Bleach, the same thing is happening, but A, it's not purposeful, and B, the characters aren't doing anything to stall. They're just kind of going, huh, well, this new observation I came up with 20 feet after the last one just popped up, so let's spend the next 20 pages talking about it. It's annoying, and it's stupid. Bleach is so terrible.
It's a shame, but I have not much else to say on it this week. I really, like, finished it. I was like, maybe we can just not talk about it this week. Maybe we could just insert it and clip out our last week's discussion on Bleach and just insert it into this podcast and see if anyone notices.
Just talk about a series we never talk about instead.
You guys should just wait a month and then do Bleach all at once, and it'll take about, what, 2 minutes to do a month's worth
probably,
of Bleach?
Yeah. I think people would be pissed off, though. There are some people who look forward to our weekly Bleach discussions. Okay. Let's go through Devilly Man pretty quickly. Chapter 2, Eru Taira. So, last time, of course, Madogiwa wanted to know what the deal was with Eru, the little kid who he had formed a contract with. Turns out the kid is basically Mini Light and wants to take people's money and stuff. So, Madogiwa basically thinks that there is something special to the kid, but he's kind of a gullible idiot, so he doesn't really know what. Eru's dodging the topic at the start of this chapter. You know, he's thinking to himself, you know, maybe he is like some sort of mob boss's son or, you know, something like that. They do this thing where Madogiwa shrinks himself so that he can just ride around with Eru instead of having to walk around with him, because otherwise there will be a giant demon walking around, scaring off their potential victims, because only evil people can see him. Then Eru manages to pocket some girl's money, and he actually wants to return it, because she's not actually a bad person, and this reveals that he only is interested in stealing dirty money, which is money obtained, of course, by evil means. So he wants to just cheat the cheaters and nothing else. So makes him seem a little bit less, you know, sociopathic, I guess. It's not really a noble streak to him, but it is at least one that does not, you know... He's probably not gonna just be...
It gives him a heroic slant, at least, as opposed to being, like, straight up, like, a unstoppable villain like he seemed, like, in the first chapter. He's just like, oh, the money shall be mine.
He's at least, you know, a punisher, as opposed to, I don't know...
Shocker. Or, I don't know.
Shocker.
Maybe I shouldn't have given
the... villain to reference, man.
I'm like a stilt man.
I should say I love Shocker, by the way. So he ends up coming across this guy, the Reverend Shiro Shido, who basically Eru trips, and so Madogiwa falls on the ground. Shiro mistakes him for a doll and hands it back, which of course tips Eru off to the fact that he's a bad person. Eru grabs his hand to thank him, and so then basically goes to his congregation where he performs this false exorcism, and he, you know, thinks to himself, oh yeah, you know, he forces women to partake in this by blackmailing them. He's a fraud. He cheats people out of their money by saying he can, you know, perform exorcisms to help them and so on and so forth. And so basically he pretends he's possessed by a demon, goes up on this crucifix, and gets Madogiwa to essentially act as the demon he has exorcised, and scares the priest into confessing all of his crimes. And also Madogiwa acts like he's going to eat his head. So as a result of all of this, Eru actually ends up helping a whole lot of people, because he kind of sets them free. The girl that he kind of pickpocketed earlier gets a note from him saying, you're free, and all of your photos have been destroyed, insinuating that she was being blackmailed, probably to act as one of the exorcism people. And so Madogiwa is like, oh, well, he's going to collect dirty money, and that means that he'll clean up scummy adults, so that must mean he's a child police officer. And Eru somehow reads his mind and goes, no, I'm not. I don't know how the fuck he did that. Maybe Madogiwa was just, like, muttering this to himself, and he was reading his lips. Oh, fuck, no.
Well, no, because Devil Man, I forget what his name is already. He just said six times.
Madogiwa.
He says, I didn't realize I was thinking aloud. Oh, so even though he's... Yeah, he's just, like... He's, like, crusting that one episode. He's like, I said the loud part quiet and the quiet part loud.
Madogiwa asks what he wants the money for, and Eru just says, I'm just going to own all the dirty money in the world. And even though he's not exactly satisfied with that, he kind of loses track of the topic. And then later on that night, they sleep in this shack somewhere, and Eru is looking at a picture of himself with seemingly his parents, and Madogiwa thinks to himself that at the time I was blissfully oblivious to the real meaning of dirty money. And little did I know that war was rearing its ugly head in this hard and cruel world. So this seems a bit more interesting than the last chapter, I do have to say. I still don't really know how far this premise can go, but it's nice to see that Eru is not nearly as simple a character as we thought he was. And he seems to be a little bit more of kind of a Hiruma-type character, you know, putting on this air of being the worst person on the planet, but in fact he's sort of doing it to hide his true intentions and to throw people off and to manipulate them that way.
What do you guys think all the paper in his room is?
Yeah, it is interesting. I don't know if that's... Maybe those are, like, paperwork, basically, of whatever this dirty money came from. Like, maybe, like, gambling receipts or debts or something like that.
Yeah, maybe he's trying to pay something off. Maybe that's the reason why he's been separated from his parents. Like, they have been separated from him because of that. And maybe he needs to get this money back in order to set them free from that. Or, I don't know. Maybe he's just a kleptomaniac. I don't know. He seems to like stealing money a lot, so...
I can definitely see how this chapter went away and kind of progressed in the plot in a more, like, interesting notion. I don't know if I'm kind of crazy sold on the idea yet of this kid being sympathetic, because I feel like if you're going to sell him as being this, like, devilish manipulator off the bat, maybe you'd want to hold on to that card a little bit longer, but it's a jumpstart series. You only have so long to catch on the audience, so maybe it's like, maybe, you know, I better get people in now and make this kid sympathetic just so I can catch them in. But no, I mean, I can dig it. It's, I find it funny when the demon's doing his whole spiel and he has to, like, stop to look over, like, what's my next line? Yes, I said to devour your soul! So I like it in that aspect.
Yeah, I mentioned Hiruma. One of the reasons that Hiruma could work in that sort of series was because he was not the main character. Senna was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Senna could just be the more noble and heroic character. And then you had the freedom to have this weird character on the side that could do all these weird things. And then you could also say, by the way, he's not really all that bad. It's a bit too, I guess, high a concept to put in this kind of setting as the main character. And I'm not really sure it's going to work.
Yeah.
But, liked it better than the first one. So
yep. So give it that. Alright, so...
Fairy Tale!
So we have two chapters of Fairy Tale this week, because last week we were too early to get the chapter, and this week we're right on time to get the chapter, so we have two this week, though they're both relatively similar chapters that kind of sum up the same thing. I just want to note, though, it's two separate weeks. Hiro is not
it's
back
not
to doing...
chapter, yeah.
He's not back to doing two a week again. He's like, just us. He's like, I had 7 minutes of free time today. I think I'll do another Fairy Tale chapter. Like, oh, God.
I couldn't continue that. I had to keep on drawing that series where we see Mavis having weird nude scenes with the other Loli in the past.
They're like, but Nick, she only looks like she's 12. But I think she actually was 12 then. It's only now that she's like a force ghost or something. Chapter 437, Magnolia. And basically, this is the return to Magnolia. There's no cover page for this because the like cover panel is actually the first panel of this. And this is... Lucy and Wendy and Natsu and everybody returning back to Magnolia, which, if you didn't realize, is the town that they're all from. They basically explain that, yeah, we're all heading in. Although they specifically give a note that... Fuck, what's her name? I can't remember it every time. Levy, yes. Gajio and Panty Lula are like, we're actually probably still going to stay on the council.
Right.
But everyone else is there, and Lucy starts to think about how all of the memories they've had here, the happy ones, the sad ones, all the...
Before we move on much further, actually in that scene where they're talking about, oh, we've got some stuff we have to take care of really quickly, Urs is like, yeah, I gotta report to Jalal, and Gray says, hey, you know, I don't snitch on me, basically, and Julia says, yeah, you know, that's our secret, and behind her... Wendy's got this weird, mortified expression on her face.
Oh, I hadn't noticed that.
Why? Why is she so freaked out?
She's very young, Nick, and they're living in sin.
I don't know, maybe she's old enough now that she just, like, sees things, even when people aren't talking about that stuff, you know, when you just got that kind of stuff on your mind, but she's still... quote-unquote pure and innocent enough character that she's freaked out by the notion of it, so she just gets embarrassed by the slightest insinuation of anything.
I guess. Although it's also weird because she's also a character who desperately wants bigger breasts, so...
Yeah, Wendy's an awful character. Okay.
We then flashback to the day that Fairy Tail actually disbanded to find out how that process all went down, and obviously when Makarov said, hey, Fairy Tail disbanding, everyone was like, why? We can actually all stay together, can't this? Like, shouldn't... We're all members of this guild, don't we have a say? And Makarov's like, no, you don't. Guild disbanded. All of you go on your own separate fucking self-journeys and don't come back because as of this moment, the guild's disbanded and you can never say it again. All right, peace, I'm gone. And he just leaves.
And he's refusing to answer any questions about it, too. He's not giving him any explanation. He just says, we're disbanding. He's like, but we want to stay together. Can't you just leave? No! And don't call yourselves Fairy Tail ever again. Bye!
Oh, man.
Worst leader ever.
Makarov, like, has to win an award for just being awful at his job.
We're going to have to, like, give out awards for characters at the end of the year. Just so we can give Makarov an award for worst leader.
Who is worse? Makarov, who, like, as in lean organization, Makarov or Yamamoto?
Makarov.
Really? Because Yamamoto was god-awful.
Yamamoto was god-awful, but he didn't fuck everything up for everything after he left the organization, as in when he died. There was stuff in place so that there could be a successor for him, whereas Makarov was just like, no! No successor! He didn't, like, wire his body... Yamamoto didn't wire his body with some sort of mechanism to blow up the entire Gotei 13 headquarters so that nobody could...
Would you be surprised if he had, though?
No.
If you, like, for some reason, Yamamoto armed himself with a nuke so that when he died, he took the rest of the Soul Society with him. You'd be like, that sounds rather par for the course for him, I guess.
And also there's the fact that Yamamoto was supposed to at times just appear incompetent because he was part of this old guard who had his mind closed to a bunch of stuff. Makarov literally was a grandfather figure to almost every single person in the guild. And he's refusing to give them any explanation. He's just saying, go your own ways because I said so. Bye. He's awful because of that. Anyway.
Makarov versus Yamamoto.
Yeah, I gotta go with Makarov.
Alright. So we're all in agreement that he's a super douche then.
He's a super douche. If he had answered some questions, maybe he wouldn't be such a douche. But yeah, the whole fact that like, oh yeah, what? I can't hear you guys. I'm gone. You're gone. Goodbye. Everything's gone. Like, come on, buddy! Take like 2 seconds to give him a reason.
Now that said, the fact that Yamamoto at least has to be debated on whether or not he's worse, that is a pretty damning statement.
So, Lucy, I don't know why I want to keep calling her Lucy.
You forgot Lucy.
Lucy is going through this basic, kind of a crisis now, because she's just like, there's so many, you know, unsure moments, I don't know what to do, I don't even know if I can actually visit the guild, because who knows what's going to happen, and Natsu's like, yeah, who cares if the guild hall's gone, you know, we could just rebuild it. She's like, but what if everybody's hearts aren't there? And shockingly, Nick, shockingly, friendship was there. To let her know that Fairy Tail lives on forever.
Is it really friendship?
Alright, really Kana shows up and starts sexually molesting her while being like, I'm here too! Glug, glug, glug.
That's what we call skinship, okay? That's what they do in order to be lighthearted about the sexual harassment. Lucy doesn't even care at this point. She's just like, she's not even happy to see her. It's like, Kana! And, yeah.
It is like a weird... nonchalantness to her, because it's like, yeah, she's like, oh, hey, how's it going, everybody? Oh, hey, did your tits get bigger? Honk, 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 honk. And Lucy just has this face like, all right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
why did I miss you again?
Not even upset, just like very just nonplussed about it all. Like, whatever.
Also kind of manages to get out about 4 paragraphs while she's drinking straight from a bottle, so that's impressive.
That's her new magic she's developed. Boozy ventriloquism. But yeah, she explains that her letter got to her, you know, even while she was chasing after guild darts, and the same's probably true for everybody, and to reinforce that, they walk into the town square where everybody from Fairy Tail that you know and love, plus 80 other characters whose names you don't remember, are there.
What the fuck is that doing the top hat? Seriously, what is with your hat? You look stupid.
I like that hat.
I actually vaguely recall this guy. He used to be the fat guy who would draw on himself for his magic.
Is he not fat anymore?
No, he lost weight for some reason, which really seems counterproductive to his magic style, but...
Yeah.
I don't know who the guy with, like, the fucking, like, Ikkaku dot on his head is. Like, I don't know who that is at all.
I don't know. He's in a very prominent position there, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of people here that they're just like, I'm here, I got your letter, how's it going? You're just like, don't know you, don't know you, don't know you.
But the kids up front.
Yeah, and fucking little cowgirls up there too. Oh wait, they actually start using their names. Holy shit!
Yeah, they just all reintroduce themselves. Yeah, or rather, people are just like Warren and Nab and Renus and Max. They're like, how did you remember these names? I don't believe you actually remember these people.
Yeah, they're just like fat dude, speed guy. I guess that guy...
Vegeter?
Is that his name? This Visitar? He could be Visitar.
Visitar, yeah, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, there's also two girls here on this page. God, I don't know any of these characters.
I actually remember Lucky, somehow. I don't know how.
One of them's even saying, I've learned some magic now. So apparently there was one member of Fair...
I was part of the guild
before. One member of Fair 2 is just like, I don't have shit, but... I probably fulfill some other fetish, so I fit in with the guild just fine. And even Lasana and Elfman are there, and blah, 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 Lucy cries. Anyway, that's the chapter there. Moving on to chapter 438, if it'll load for me. There we go. The Seventh Guildmaster, which basically opens with Lucy in the shower, and a lot of gratuitous shots of her showering and her
breasts. Sorry, guys. I'm so sorry that you went... 5 chapters without a Lucy
answer. And her putting a towel on her breast. It's like, seriously, it's like 5 straight pages of Lucy's breasts and nudity humor at her expense. Because she comes out and, you know, she's doing her whole shower thing, talking about how nice it is to be in her room and how she'll have to probably settle back in with the guild, but it's nice to have her whole room and how nice it is to have your own place and be in your own place alone. And, of course, obviously, Natsu's there, like, yeah, what's up? Fucking, like, eating shit on her couch. She goes to kick him, which seems like a bad move in the towel already. But Natsu catches it and then just lifts her up. He's like, oh, I guess you're too slow for me, Lucy. And she's just like, oh, God. And her towel falls down. And I love Natsu's expression because just like the last chapter where Lucy just didn't seem to give a fuck about being sexually harassed, Natsu's just like, Anyway, we got a job. He just doesn't seem to give a fuck that he just got full frontaled.
Well, they've established this before. He's at the point where he and Happy are both at the point where he's like, we've just seen you naked so many times, we don't really care anymore. You know, there's nothing to be excited about.
Oh, God. So all the members of Fairy Tail are slowly working to rebuild the guild. They're all using their magic. Just a couple of the members are talking about how Gray and Luvia are living together, and a rumor starts going out of control that not only are they living together, but they also have a kid, and Gray has 3 different mistresses. And Gray explains that no, the situation is that she just moved in and refused to leave. To which Luvia just responds in the back, like, hey, hey, hey. And I'm like, that sounds disturbing on its own merit, but you two are consenting adults, so I'm just going to assume that is what it is.
And we also learn what Lisanna was doing in her time. Fucking... You thought that Lucy being a reporter and nothing else was bad? Well.
Fucking Lisanna's been waitressing for fucking a year now.
Her skill is demonstrated because she can run around and hand out drinks really fast. That's her skill now.
It's going to be very important. But everyone's like, oh, or rather Happy's like, oh, does that mean Elfman was a waiter? Like, no, Elfman had super special training because he's going to be an important member of this series going forward. Get your hopes up, Chris. Get them up. Your favorite character is going to totally mean something this time around. I'm not buying into it, Lucy. You stop thugging, taking that football away from me. I'm going to learn not to kick it this time. Elfman's not going to be doing dick.
Well, considering what happens, it actually seems as though he might...
No, Nick! No! Don't start running towards that football, because they're going to pull it away from you at the last second!
Well, I'm going to fake punt, so we don't realize.
You know, I'm really lost in this...
I'm ready to go either way. So...
Okay. Like, I'm really lost in this football analogy now, though.
Okay, if the punter tries to swipe the ball away from me...
Okay.
I'm going to stop and take the ball and do a, and just run it instead.
I've never seen a play where someone's actively taken a ball from their teammate, though. It seems rude.
You've never seen a football player actively try to sabotage their team?
Yeah, like actively try to cause their own teammate to fumble.
Can you imagine if that were like a thing? Oh, God, I want to see that now. Like some sort of little short where someone's trying to sabotage their team, but they can't end up actually helping. Anyway, my point was... Elfman actually, you know, gets to look kind of cool in this chapter because he actually goes toe-to-toe with Nasik for a little bit. It's like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah, well, we shall see if anything really comes of that. But the conversation turns to Levy basically saying, you need to figure out who's going to be the 7th Guildmaster is.
That is important.
Yes, it's important because they need one now. And a bunch of characters kind of...
Did Macro name a Guildmaster at one point?
Well, technically... Mako, or whatever his name was the 5th Guildmaster because he became the one in Makarov's absence when everyone time skipped away. And then I guess he just became the Guildmaster again. I must have missed the part, or I probably forgotten it. I guess there was some part where they transitioned it over back to Makarov.
Guild.
And now we're, I guess, going on the 7th one. I guess it's like presidents. Like, they actually, like, mark themselves, and if you repeat, you just become the same one again. But Charlie even notes, he's like, well, won't whoever's becoming the, you know, 7th Guildmaster just be a placeholder for the 6th one? Showing that everyone in the guild, for some reason, still has an affection for Makarov, even though he was like, no, this can't happen ever again! All of you fuck off! Yeah, but then Natsu and Gray have, not Gray, Elfman have a fight.
You're right about that, yeah. Makarov became the 6th Guildmaster after Makarov. And actually, Guildarts. Guildarts was the 5th Guildmaster, that was it.
Guild? I thought it was Macau, was it?
Macau was the 4th. And after they came back, somehow Guildarts became the 5th, but then Makarov was the 6th. But they're both gone, so that's why.
I'm so confused. I thought Makarov was... I guess he was the... Alright, who's the 2nd, then? I thought there were... I think I'm thinking the Hokages. That's what's screwing me up. I'm thinking Hokages, where there was four... There were four at the start of the series.
The 2nd was one of the founders...
Alright, now I'm on the same page. Now I know exactly what's happening. Elfman, that's who have a fight, and they start knocking into each other. It causes one of those big moments where everyone in Fairy Tail's like, ha ha ha, we're all beating each other up and super wacky, and isn't it fun? Urza gets pissed off. It's like, everybody back to work, and thus everyone unanimously votes her the 7th Guildmaster.
Which is bullshit, because this is a complete character change for her. She would have joined in.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess maybe she's like, no, I want a fucking roof over my head before I start doing fucking tomfoolery and shenanigans. Or I don't know, maybe she's matured in the past year, Nick. But it's not over, Nick. Because throughout this entire thing, you've seen big names like Redis, Jet, Drury. But I know you've been asking yourself, Nick, where has the most important member of Fairy Tail been? Where is Doran Bolt? He's back, Nick. He's back.
That's not Doran Bolt.
Yes, it is. He's just going by his real name now, which is Mest Grider.
Right. Right. So he's like, by the way, guys, Makarov is in trouble.
And I just want one dude in the back to be like, fuck him!
Although... Given the fact that way that he was just like, by the way, you're actually a member of Fairy Tail and you've been working for us this whole time, but you've erased your own memories, bye! It was probably going to be inevitable that he turned back up, and
alright. I mean, look, I know people when these chapters came out complained about them. Yeah, Makarov's little speech was annoying. I think the rest of it's just part for parcel the way Fairy Tail's going. Fair enough. Urza is the Guildmaster, I don't care. She's beaten everything else at this point. Let her one-shot this, too. I just think it's weird that they keep making this Doran Bolt thing become, like, the end of chapters. Like, he shows up, like, it's Mest Grider! Which is a stupid name.
Let's go back to being Doran Bolt. That's an actual name. Come on.
Yeah.
I have a confession to make.
Okay, Nick.
As I was going through this chapter, a thought occurred to me. Which it shouldn't have, given how it began. Which was, what if Lucy became the Guildmaster? Now, given how it opens up with her being naked everywhere, it's like, well, obviously that's not going to happen. But she did play an integral role in actually bringing everyone back together. And she actually kept, you know, tags on everyone to track their progress. In a way, she was actually probably more responsible for everyone staying in contact and being able to come back together than anyone else, which is actually a very important thing. So that's why it just occurred to me. I kind of knew, it was like, nah, that's not going to be it. That's because, you know, Fairy Tail just wouldn't do that for her. But I thought, well, you know, if she were actually given something like an important position and stuff, you know, it'd be kind of cool.
It would make absolute sense. It actually is a position she'd probably be very worthy of. But Urza's been given the position, and I don't see her dying for any reason. So unless Makarov comes back and takes the guild position title again...
I'm going to be the eighth now!
Yeah, I'm just like, you fuck.
Aha! 3-6 Andy! Fuck all y'all!
Otherwise, yeah, no. I don't know. I guess we'll see. But let's move on to Food Wars.
Food Wars Shokugeki no Soma, Chapter 121, Monster Event. Basically, everyone's in a lecture. Yeah, they were in class for a second. And the professor said, the school festival is rapidly approaching, and anyone who receives permission from the Institute can set up a booth of their choice at the festival.
Hold on, wait, Nick. They're in English 1. How is that going to teach them how to be better chefs?
It'll let them say English meals.
Oh, okay.
Hot dog! That was my Iron Chef.
I'm glad you're the first one to do something racist in this podcast.
It was Iron Chef, not racist. Shut up.
I'm going to feel a lot better if Furious Mini decides to show up later in this podcast now.
I only do it when I'm making Iron Chef references. You shut up. Green peas! So Soma's got the school festival on his mind, and he's like, oh, I've got an idea! And he rushes out, and he ends up spotting Arina outside of lecture hall, and she looks like a bit of a deer in the headlights when she realizes she's been spotted. She's like, god damn it, why can't Hisako bail me out of this situation? Although she does actually engage him in conversation, so you only get yourself to blame at that point. But basically, Soma says, oh, you know, are you going to have your own booth and stuff? And she's like, well, actually, the booths that the Council 10 are doing, they're the star attraction of every festival, so every one of us is going to be doing it, and we're all well into our preparations. And so she's like, oh, that means the Kuga-senpai will have a booth, too. And so basically, he sees this as his chance to prove that he can outdo one of the Council 10 at something, and thus he can actually get convince Kuga to have a Shokugeki with him. If he has a more successful booth. So, idea, you know. But as he walks off, he's like, oh yeah, he explains this his whole pattern of thought to Arina. She's like, this guy's got no fucking idea what he's getting into. He then goes to Phys Ed and has basically the same conversation with Megumi. And he's like, well, so you know, do you know what kind of cooking that Kuga specializes in? You know, that way I'll actually be able to compete directly with them, presumably. And so she says, oh, he specializes in Chinese food. And at that moment, we're introduced to a new character who happens to specialize in Chinese food as well. Her name is Hojo. And so Soma's, you know, like, oh, you know, can you help out with this and so on and so forth. And so she says, well, what kind of preparations do you already have in place? Do you have a staff together? And he's like, what do you mean a staff? I can handle a booth by myself. And they're like, oh, Soma, you idiot! You don't know anything about how this works! So, Hojo takes him to Kuga's Citadel, which is the Chinese Food Research Society, which is really fucking creepy, because there are dozens and dozens and dozens of bald men, all in perfect synchronization, preparing the same dish in exactly the same way. And Kuga occasionally comes out and is chastising them for being the slightest bit out of sync, and they're apologizing for...
Yes. The greatest method of chastising them, though. Like, it's just like, hey, what are you doing? And then he gets, like, I don't know, like, he's supposed to be, like, a, like, tsundere anime character. He's like, dummy, with a move like that, we'll never do good at the festival! And then he just flips in a dime, and he's like, but you fuck up today, it's your fault, you better get it right, fuckhead! Like, it's like the weird two-panel difference between them. Like, one panel, he has, like, little sparkles behind him, and his eyes are, like, wimpy, and he's, like, holding up his wrist, like, oh, you big brute! Then the next, it's just like, fuck it, I'm gonna murder you and your family tonight.
Also, it's kind of funny to see him talking to Hojo, because we saw her playing basketball before and actually fucking dunking on a dude. So she's a pretty tall person, and Kuga is noted as being short, so he's looking up for her, he's like, oh, are you gonna join us? He's like, no. Okay, I figured not, but you're still welcome here anytime. He's like, well, handled that rejection pretty easily, didn't you? So someone says, I'm gonna run my own booth, and I'm trying to come up with a recipe, Soku says, ah, okay, well, I'm still debating exactly what I'm going to do, but I'll show you what our specialty dish is going to be. And he gets 10 of the followers in the club to immediately prepare Mapo Tofu. And it's this, I don't know, fucking spicy Chinese dish. I don't know Asian food. It's actual Chinese food. Where is the frickin' ramen and the fucking egg rolls? I don't know what this is.
You named two foods?
I named two foods. It's not served with a giant cardboard carton of rice. It can't be real Chinese food. So, Soma is blown away by the dish. It's like, oh, it's spicy but good, but spicy but good! And so Kuga says, this is, you know, my combination of powerfully hot spice and powerfully deep umami. So a slot from a family restaurant wouldn't even come close. And I've got all these people following my recipe down to the last detail. I've trained them myself. And you know, the Tosuke Institute School Festival is a monster event that attracts upwards of 500,000 visitors every year. So if you can't crank out over 1,000 servings a day, you won't even sniff the top ranks. So Soma is kind of taken aback by this figure. And he says, okay, you don't even have a staff aside from yourself. You don't even have a recipe yet. So what is it that you think you can beat me with? And that's where the chapter ends. So Soma, once again, has gotten in over his head. But we'll try and actually take things seriously now.
How does he not know that you're going to have to sell, like,
because
the
because he's
planes?
Soma.
Like, yeah, how many times have they done these... these, like, tournaments and stuff, like a hojillion times, and there's always some weird catch. It's never normal, Soma. It's never normal.
I would like to see Soma's grades in non-cooking classes, because I'll bet that they're terrible. He gets really fired up about this stuff, but apparently he pays no mind to details outside of his own actual cooking performance. I mean, he's obviously capable of working hard and preparing for stuff, but yeah... he just does not know very much until he does that. What'd you think, Chris?
That was alright. I guess we'll have to see where it kind of goes from here. This is one of those setup things. I'm like, yeah. I think it's funny that this guy has such a weird, like, back and forth black and white personality, but otherwise, yeah. We'll have to see where it goes from there. This is sort of the end of series of this week that I was kind of met on. Almost every series from here on forward I thought was either, like, really good to great this week.
This dude needs to coin out.
I'm like, wait, Nick, I barely read Nisekoi each week.
I don't even remember what happened. I just kind of skimmed through it now, dude.
I know it was a New Year's chapter. At the end, all the girls were like, here's where my standing with Raku is at this point.
Spoilers, everybody likes him.
Not Paula Abdul, not Paula Abdul, Paula McCoy.
That's true.
She just wants bigger tits.
Not Ruri.
No, she actually has, like, the nicest one. She's like, I wish for peace and good health. And everyone else is like, I want Raku to like me.
And she was like, I want so many girls.
Yeah, he's like, I want girls to rain from the sky.
The streets today were paved with blood as...
the vindictive genie grants another wish from a young teenage douchehead.
Japanese teenager fails to learn from the a million bucks joke. Next up, My Hero Academia, number 44, Relaxing Day Off. Featuring a badass color page with Bakugo on the front, looking very pissed off at everything.
I like that color scheme with the, like, the teal for his armor and then, like, the hot orange for everything else. It's very popping.
Also, like, his eyes are really messed up.
He's well, so angry.
As All Might will mention several times this chapter, what's up with that face?
So, the tournament is done. Todoroki was defeated by Bakugo last week, and it's time for the award ceremony. And the most pissed off person at the entire award ceremony is Bakugo, who is fucking done up like Hannibal Lecter. He's got a grill strapped over his mouth, his arms are bound, he's chained to this heavy, like, stone column behind him, all while up on his winner's podium. because Todoroki is right next to him, he's just trying to struggle away from it and beat him up. I love Bakugo. the instructor slash host of the competition, whose name I forget, says that both Tokoyami and Ida tied for third place, but Ida is not there, so Tokoyami is by himself on the third place podium because Ida had to leave to deal with that family emergency, i.e. his brother was attacked and seemingly killed, although as we find out, maybe not. So Deku thinks to himself, you know, I hope that he's okay, because of course he would. That should go without saying, honestly. Presenting the medals is All Might, who flips down off of, I guess, the roof of the stadium.
Of course he does.
Yeah.
He, and presumably based off the, you know, spinning lines behind him, he backflips all the way down, or front flips all the way down there.
So everyone's like, oh man, even All Might is here. So he goes kind of one by one to from third to first place. It's like, okay, Tokoyama, you're a strong kid, but, you know, he actually gives him a hug and pats him on the back and says, you know, but if you rely on your quirk too much, you aren't going to be able to overcome a bad matchup. So hone your innate strength to open a world of opportunity. And then he also puts the medal on Todoroki and he says, congratulations, but you know, you held back. You didn't use your left side in the final match, so, you know, why'd you do that? And Todoroki is very upfront with him and says, my match against Midoriya is the reason for that, and I think I've lost my way, and I know you've taken interest in him, and I am starting to see why. I've always wanted to become a hero like you, but it's not like I can just forget and get over things. That's not enough. There's still something I have to settle first. And All Might gives
I want All Might to give me a hug and solve my problems. Like, it's just like, what's going on? I'm just like, well, it all started with my dad not being around for a lot in my life. He's like, I'm not a therapist, kid. Here's your stupid participation medal.
Okay.
I'm like, wait, I haven't told you yet about how Catholicism, I think, is crippled with the self-guilt.
So, All Might basically wishes Todoroki luck of resolving his issue, and then he goes to Bakugo and says, ungags him. You lived up to your promise, so good job. Cuts back to at the start of the competition when Bakugo vowed he would take first place. But Bakugo just goes fucking ballistic. His eyes grow horns, basically, because he's making such angry eyes that they are bulging out of the sides of his head. And he's twitching everywhere and he says, this win doesn't mean squat. It doesn't matter what anyone says. If I don't recognize it, then that medal's just garbage. So All Might somehow actually manages to come up with a little quip, which is, in a world that's constantly graded on a curve, there's not many who can continuously be on top. So accept this as a wound, even, so you don't forget. And Bakugo is still rejecting it, and so All Might has to hang it on his nose.
He actually lands it in his teeth.
And he's like, oh, there we go.
Perfect. And done.
Then he also turns to the rest of the heroes and he says, everyone here today has the potential to be standing up here, as you all witnessed, competition, encouragement, pushing each other to climb higher and higher. The sprouts of today will grow into the heroes of tomorrow. In that spirit, let's have one final cheer. And he says by himself, thanks for the hard work, really, really loudly, although all of the students are trying to say plus ultra. And someone's like, we're supposed to say plus ultra All Might. And he's like, oh, well, but they really did work hard.
He gives everyone a big plus, though. It was just mentioned in the chat room, but this is something that really does go a long way to really establishing why this guy is the number one hero. Not just because he's the strongest, but everything he did here was a very encouraging and mentor and very guiding thing for him to do. So it really does kind of paint an idea of him of why this guy is the ideal superhero.
Then for something completely different following that, Ida reaches the hospital where his brother is, rushes into the emergency room, and they basically say, you know, the anesthesia is just worn off. He's woken up, but he's still kind of out of it. And had the surgery been delayed by 2 minutes, it would have been too late. So Ida's brother is there. He's got this an oxygen mask on, and he just says, you know, you know, Tenya and Mother, you know, my amazing little brother, I know you looked up to me, so I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I lost. And Ida, of course, looks fucking distraught. So, this was a little heart-wrenching.
This is the end of this chapter is everyone, like, visiting their families or seeing their families, and it's a whole spectrum of emotions. I guess it kind of works best because they hit you with the heaviest stuff first and then kind of slowly filter it down into the more happy stuff before ending on the silliest note possible. But I really love the way that all these different stories are played out.
We go to Todoroki next, and he is at the Todoroki household, and his oldest sister, Fuyumi, who presumably is one of the failed, you know, children, is like, what's going on? Why aren't we telling, you know, our dad about this? And why are you going to see mom now? And so Todoroki just doesn't answer her, but he thinks to himself, you know, my very existence drove her away, and that's why I never went to her. I know that she has been my father's prisoner this whole time, so with all I've got, with my whole spirit, I'll say I want to be a hero again. I'll tell her that. There's so much I have to say, and that's what I'm feeling now.
His hand's shaking when he's going to open the door to see her. He has to, like, take a moment to compose himself.
And she's in a mental ward, we should point out. Mm-hmm. There are bars on the windows and stuff, and she's looking out, gazing out the window, and when he comes in, we just see her turn to look at him and then cut away.
No, we needed like 3 more panels. Just 3 more panels.
That's how comic books work. You have to wait for the resolution, unless it's the main character.
What if her 3 panels, though, were her looking at her cup of coffee, looking at him, and then splashing him in the face with, like, the other eye?
Oh, no, not the other one.
It's like, you should have let us know. We would have taken the hot water out of her room first.
At least we wouldn't be wondering.
Then Uraraka's walking home, talking to herself about her plans for the day, and she gets to her apartment and opens the door, and she's like, oh, the door's unlocked. And her mom and dad are there, they come bursting down the hallway like fucking monsters.
Like all fours, what the fuck?
And her eyes bug out literally like 18 inches out of her skull, which requires her mom to then push them back into her head.
I didn't realize they were pushing them back in, yeah, mom is.
I didn't see that either.
Holy shit, that's great.
They're like, how'd you get here? Did you come by the bullet train? And their dad's like, I just had to come and see my little champion. And she's all crying and happy. And then we cut to Deku, who's talking with his mom, who's, of course, very concerned with him. The fact that he passed out 7 times. Since the cavalry battle, and he's like, oh, I guess it was just, I was just pushing myself a little far, and so he's like, oh yeah, you know, why does your power have to be, have such a risk attached to it? You know, I support you, but that doesn't mean I don't worry. And so, of course, Deku reflects on what Healer Girl told him, which is that, you know, she's not going to heal his ridiculous self-inflicted injuries anymore. So, you know, he just thinks to himself, I am worrying everyone who looks out for me, so I need another way, my own way, so that no one has to worry about me. And he thinks about All Might, and Uraraka and Ida, and even Frog Girl and Sticky Bun Head. I also like the little detail of the flashback to when Deku found out she found out about Deku's ability. He's like, oh, you see, it's a sudden mutation. Heretofore unexplained by modern medical science, you see, blah, blah, blah. And she's going, I'm so happy! Flood of tears behind her, like a fucking jet bloodbath.
I'm so glad that there are so many good parent characters in this. I mean, you have Endeavor, who, you know, takes the cake for douchebag dad. But, like, she's so happy for him, and she's so supportive, and Uraraka's parents, you know, clearly love her, and Ida has a good relationship with his family. Like, it's so nice to see this.
Yeah, it helps to offset Endeavor's, honestly.
It's like,
it's nice to see
Endeavor.
It's nice to see that, because so often in manga, it's just like either, you know, there's the manga parents like, oh yeah, you know, I'm proud of them, but they're gone now. Or my parents are douches and I have to come out from under them and stuff like that. There's never just, you know, happy families. You just don't see them. Because they're unexceptional, quote-unquote. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's nice to see. He's like, yeah, actually, the douchey parents are the exception in this world.
I also like this last panel. Die, you damn plaque!
It's the best thing ever.
Rush.
Bakugo is so angry that he is, like, making little explosions while brushing his teeth.
It is great. Like, everyone has, like, this, like, wrap-up to their life at home, and Bakugo's just still pissed off from the fucking tournament. He's like, fucking plaque!
Well,
just...
if you see him right as Aizawa's like, okay, you know, you guys get the next day off, he's sitting at his desk with the medal still in his mouth. Dude, what the hell?
And I was like, I don't know
you
who
don't
it
have
is.
To clench your teeth, man.
I think it says it's his mom, and it's just someone's like, it's too early for screaming!
Bakugo's the best.
It was great. I really... This entire arc went a really long way towards, like, just building up things. We didn't get a lot of conclusion in all of this. We got mostly just build up, but all of it is so satisfying where I want to see it go. Like, I really want to see where Todoroki develops things. I really want to see where, you know, what Deku decides out of this, like, where he feels like he can, you know, find his ninja path in, or, you know, whatever we would call it. You know, I want to see where all these go, and it's just such a great, like, kind of wrap up, a slow chapter after all these battles and everything like that. Just perfectly paced and absolutely phenomenal.
So, straight from all those examples of good parents, Naruto, the 7th Hokage in the Scarlet Spring, number 700 plus 5, the future. Last time, Sasuke didn't recognize his own daughter and attacked her because she was having Sharingan and people with Sharingan have been trying to kill him. Open up! As he's trying to stab her, he just misses her, sword goes into the column next to her, and he lets go of it, reaches out to her face, presumably to pluck her eyes out. I don't know. But Sarada reacts by just shouting out, Daddy, which is mortifying. And he finally goes, oh. Oh.
Oh, right. You're my cum. I forgot.
Oh, God.
You came from my ball. Sorry.
So he just goes, wait, you're Sarada. And she's like, yeah, I am. And he says, oh. So Sarada just thinks, you know, I knew you, that you were my dad right away. And she, you know, thinks back to the idea of her, you know, joyfully reuniting with him and, you know, hugging him and stuff. And, of course, the reality is very different from that. And, of course, right at that moment, Naruto and Chocho come into the tower. And they're like, oh, come on, you know, why'd you run off? And Naruto greets Sasuke. And he's like, why did you bring these kids with you? And Naruto's, well, see, what happened was, but Sarada says, we came to look for you. And she calls him dad. Chocho, of course, goes, could this guy be my dad?
Alright, here's something that's lying out there. I think Kishimoto has been absolutely phenomenal with this series thus far. I think his writing has improved, his art's fantastic, his ability to use the medium has improved phenomenally. There's a fantastic amount of juxtaposition and interesting visuals he uses in his artwork now. One thing we didn't comment on there, but you actually see that she still has her Sharingan on until she has that, you know, realization of what she thought she was going to get out of Sasuke and what she realized she's going to get in her meeting, and there's that one panel where her eye's all black and that's her Sharingan disappearing. Really cool touches like that, and the way they're characterizing these people, phenomenal. Everything is great except for fucking Chocho. She has, like, this one black spot in the series. You're just like, oh god, what the fuck?
You need to have more than one joke associated with you,
seriously. If you've ever seen Pitch Perfect, or if you've seen Rebel Wilson, anything ever, she's Fat Amy. She's just that character. You exist to be a fat joke over and over again.
So, Sarada says, you know, I followed after, you know, Seventh Hokage because I wanted to ask you something. And he's like, what? Well, is my mom, you know, my real mom? And then we cut back to Sakura, who has seemingly just regained consciousness. Shizune is explaining the whole situation to her, and Sakura says, okay, so I guess that she is headed out to Pass Tower. Shizune says, yeah, it seems like that. So presumably Sakura is going to be joining with this group at some point as she comes after Sarada. So everyone's like, what are you talking about, Sarada? Because this is actually the first time she's opened up to this, to the present group. And so Sasuke says, what happened? And Sarada goes, what happened? You haven't been around at all. Why aren't you here, you know, together with me and Mom? You don't even care that you've forgotten your daughter's face. And she pulls out the picture she found. Who is this woman next to you who wears the same glasses as me? You know, come on. Do you think I could ask Mom about that? She won't say a thing to me. You're never around. I can't trust either of you. What have you been doing all this time? And Sasuke says, it has nothing to do with you.
Ugh, I hate him so much.
Here's the thing. I hate him. This is 100% in character for him, though. This
really
is exactly what Sasuke would do. And I think this is actually a good thing. Because we're seeing, you know, we just commented like 2 weeks ago last week that Naruto is such a more appealing, interesting character because of this. Because the traits that made him annoying now are things that are deep in his past. They've now defined him. He's grown from them. He's learned from them. It's what's made him a very good father figure to the entire village. Whereas Sasuke, all of his traumatic, you know, childhood moments are things he's really never let go. He doesn't have that, you know, relationship with Sakura that Naruto seems to have with Hinata. He's holding on to a lot of pain. He's always being the loner. He doesn't know how to deal with it. Eventually, at the end of this series, I'm going to just take a random guess. Sarada's going to have a moment with her father, and Sasuke is going to get his closure to his story and have a family again. And
whether he likes it or not.
Yeah. It makes sense he's still an asshole here, though. The one thing I want to comment on, when she says the line, do you think a daughter could ask her mom such a thing? I don't believe it's supposed to be a joke. Like, it's supposed to be like, what a funny line. But Naruto's face when she says that, it's like half of his face just picked up on a really bad fart or something. Like, woo, but the other half hasn't reacted to it yet. It's such a weird reaction to that.
Oh, because Chocho is understandably confused because most of this is going over her head. But yeah, that is quite an expression Naruto's pulling, considering he shouldn't understand what most of this is going on. Presumably, he knows almost as much about the situation as Sasuke does. So, yeah. I mean, after that wonderful reaction to his panicking daughter who has never seen him before in her, as far as she can recall, Sarada rushes out and just leaves, basically. Chocho finally gets it. Oh, you're Sarada's dad. Okay. And then we have a flashback from Naruto's perspective, it seems, where basically Sasuke was explained to, you know, the Council of the Kages, saying, you know, we sealed Kage away, but she was, you know, creating this army of white Zetsu and preparation for a war, and that's always, you know, bothered me, so I've been tracking her down her roots, and I learned that the white Zetsu soldiers actually existed long before Shinobi ever did. And what I believe this means is that something was coming that actually frightened Kaguya, should it appear. So, basically, you know, everyone's like, okay, what does that mean? You know, is there, like, some other sort of, you know, figure like Kaguya that's coming? And Sasuke essentially said, okay, what I want to do is, you know, Naruto, you have to stay and protect the village as the Hokage. I've got the Rinnegan. I have to look into this. So, you know, I'll do what I meant to do. You know, and this is going to be our way of working together, basically. I'm just going to go off on my own, but I'll be doing it in the name of the village. So, treat my movements as a top-secret mission known only to the counselors here. The future ought to stay bright. So, within all of that, there is something that actually stands out to me, and that is that... actually, no, I'm wrong about that. Never mind. But, basically, of course, Sasuke is just like, doesn't give any consideration to the people he's actually leaving behind. And Sakura is there, so presumably she's important in some capacity, if not to the village, then to him. So he's just like, nope, gotta do this, and doesn't really give a shit. So, good for you. So, Naruto, of course, is the one to go out and approach Sarada after she runs off, and she says, okay, look, your dad is a great shinobi. I mean, he's not me.
It's the one compliment he actually could give her at that point without being a lying asshole. He can't be like, look, he still cares about... I don't know that. Look, he has feelings deep... No, he's kind of superficial. He was really powerful. You don't understand. His bullshit eyes, you got those eyes. They're ridiculous. So, cheer up, kid.
But, you know, he can't really say anything else. This rug just, you know, looks down the ground. He's all disappointed. She's got freaking tear tracks in her eyes now. And she starts thinking about Sakura, who, of course, is on the path to go and find her kid. Because she does care! Yay!
Yay!
She's like, that little bitch stole my wallet before she left!
Then we cut to Shin and his mysteriously black-cloaked master, who whips off his coat, revealing that there are multiple Sharingan eyes all over his body, in his arm, all around his head, and he says, Akatsuki is revived! And he's got a whole bunch of, apparently, guys like Shin, who all have the Uchiha symbol on their backs, and they all go, yes, sir! And they begin to transport through one of the weird little eye thingies, and they use the, you know, trans-dimensional travel jutsu thing, and they go somewhere. But at that moment, Chocho is like, okay, look, you need to make things up with Sarada, Sasuke, so here, take these chips, they're barbecue flavor.
Chocho.
God. I mean, it's actually kind of a nice gesture, but it's just like, she's fat. That is the joke. Yeah. So, Shin and I, dude, leap out, and they gun towards Sarada, launch projectiles everywhere. Naruto sees them coming and deflects them using some of the Biju's chakra, and then after he does that, Sasuke shows up and confronts Aidude. And that's where the chapter ends. Actually, it sort of looks like Naruto uses a bit of the Hyuga deflection technique. I'm not sure. It might just be him summoning the Kyuubi head around him, though.
It looks like it's the claw, because it looks like the back half of it kind of is shaped like a claw. What do you guys feel about the reveal about there being a stronger force than maybe even Kaguya out there?
I think that that is exaggerated, and it's just meant to make things seem important. Kind of like how whenever there's like a Naruto movie, it's like, oh, it's even more powerful than X character the fans are already familiar with. You know, it's in order to raise stakes, but it's going to just turn out to be a confrontation, and then the day will be saved, so who cares how powerful they are.
Yeah, I think if it's more powerful than Kaguya, then this arc is going to be like 6 years long. So I doubt it's more powerful. Or they'll like figure it out, and the enemy hasn't gotten enough strength, so they just wipe it out easy. Something like that.
Ah, defeat it while they're still in the cocoon stage. Interesting.
Yes. I like the little monster that keeps transporting them. It reminds me of the golems from Lucifer and the Biscuit Hammer.
I was thinking they did remind me of something. I guess that would be where it was from. Those jerks. They killed people. They killed my rat friend. I think the rat. I can't remember. It's been a while. Anyway, One Piece.
Chapter 788, My Battle. Birdcage, still shrinking. Everyone's panicking. Some of the Galaxian Fire is still trying to hold back Doflamingo, and is very unimpressed by them. He just says, I gave you a message, bring me Straw Hat. Giant strings everywhere, battering people everywhere, tossing them around like, I don't know, something very small. Cut over to Guts, who is still carrying Luffy around.
I can't hear you say it without immediately the rest of the Toriko theme song coming in. Guts! 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 Guts!
Someone reports to him that, you know, there's not much time left because Lucy has to recover, and they're going to have mass fatalities before they can reach that point. But Guts says, actually has this nice little badass line where he says, you don't throw a fighter into the ring when you know he can't fight. We're not going to hand him over until he's ready. So, good for you, Guts. But at that moment, they come across Law, who leaps from a building somewhere with his room ability, just kind of pops in front of them. And so they're freaked out by this, and he says, okay, is his haki returning? And they say, yeah, we've got 3 minutes, 20 seconds to go. So Law says, all right, I'll take him from here. And we then go to the edge of the birdcage where Bartolomeo has summoned a giant barrier. He says, nothing could cut through this, so everyone, push! And all of the people who joined up with him get behind his barrier and try and push the birdcage back. Robin is helping as well. Even Leo and some of the Tantata are trying to help, which is kind of adorable. Leo also apparently explained to Robin a special ability of Princess Mancherry's, which are called Dandelixirs, which are little dandelions made from Mancherry's tears, which are floating through the sky and going to the edge of the birdcage where people need them most, and just touching people who are injured so that they still have the strength to run even while they're hurt. And it only lasts a few minutes, but that's all they need, because the birdcage is only going to be up for a few more minutes until Luffy's able to fight. Didn't even forget about Princess Mancherry. Even she has a little role in this battle, which is surprising. Then we get Usopp. He's not done either. He is up on Hack's back. And he gets all their attention, and he says, everyone who is strong enough to help, go east and west. And he's like, what are you talking about? The birdcage? We can't move that thing. Don't talk back to me! Trust in my comrades! Everyone's panic is like, oh my god, it's God's righteous fury! Let's do what he says. Because he's excited. And Rebecca decides to do something kind of crazy. Because she says, if that birdcage really is an immovable object, then all this is for naught. Everyone's suffering is wasted, so I won't let you do that, Doflamingo. And so she just thinks to herself that she is willing to even disobey Kairos' order not to shed someone's blood. And we get a little shot of her sword on her back as she thinks this to herself. But, surprisingly, before she can get to Doflamingo to challenge him, she sees that Viola is already there. And everyone's like, what are you doing? Even Doflamingo's like, why are you here? And Viola says, if the Don Quixote family is going to collapse into nothing, wouldn't I be taking too much for granted to just walk away, having once been officer myself? Either I die, or you die, Dofie. And she's got her little knife. So, she's, I think, being even crazier than Rebecca is, because noble sacrifice and all that shit. Let's see. Pushing against the birdcage. Frankie has got all the Tantata on one side. All the gladiators are helping out D'Artagnan on the other side. Group is also with Zoro, helping him push. And who helps out Zoro, Chris?
Fujitora, Nick!
Yeah?
The purple tiger!
He says, I'm not one to stand by while fools struggle at their task. Though my power may be slight, I pledge it to your cause! And of course, at his demonstration, all the Marines under his command also start to help. They're like, okay, if you can't use haki, go inside the factory, push there, everyone, you'll help out! And everyone is also obeying Usopp's command. Basically, everyone who is capable of doing so starts to push. And we get this long little panel of everyone just shouting out, push! As everyone throws everything they've got into it. And for a brief moment, suddenly the birdcage stops. And everyone's like, oh my god! And then it starts to move again. But they're like, yo, even if it's for a moment, the cage can be stopped. We can stop the cage and buy enough time for Luffy to recover. And so, let's see. We also see. So Gyatso at this point has left Luffy with Law. Rebecca, we see, is crying after Viola. We don't see how that whole confrontation is going down just yet. And we close on a panel of Law sitting next to Luffy as he tries to recover. Time left until Lucy's recovery. 1 minute.
Such a great chapter. Absolutely phenomenal in that so much is happening, as you said before, like, essentially just to stall. But with how much weight they've put behind this, how much just a couple seconds feels so massive right now. And everybody is getting in as a part of it, you know. Bartolomeo is setting up this giant thing. We see Frankie leading the Tantatas. Viola's gonna stand up against Doflamingo against all odds, you know. Princess Mancherry is gonna fucking cry and heal people's tears, which is a shitty character, so that's the best they could really do with her to begin with. You know, Rebecca's out there, and she might finally, you know, break her promise and do that. You know, you're seeing characters from the Gladiators who hadn't really gotten any focus at all, but we're seeing that they're still there as well, and they're going to get involved. And just seeing everybody who's involved in this helping. Everybody going together, and all of their efforts together are just such small effects, but it feels so enormous. And there's so much you can even say just between each chapter. It's just, this is one of the best ways of One Piece's ability to utilize these characters. It's a huge cast, but everyone's involved in this, and it makes this whole chapter feel like seven. There's so much going on, and it's such a great way to build up this tension leading into the final battle. It's not necessarily even something One Piece has done before. You know, we haven't had that moment. It's done in other series, like, I know, the main character can fight, but, you know, we need to kill time for him to do it or whatever. You know, it's different from Luffy's past opponents. You know, it's a new kind of scenario here, but it feels so awesome. There's a scene, a panel at the bottom of, not a two-page spread, but one of Oda's kind of like quasi two-page spreads, where you see the birdcage is literally just pushing in the Colosseum, the factory, and Flower Hill all together. And you're just like, God, that's terrifying to think how strong that is. So, just absolutely great. Just a really cool chapter. The relief they have when it stops for just a hot second, it made it all worth it. Just fantastic all around.
I liked it too. It was intense, in a word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the type of chapter where, like, it's badass, but it makes me so warm inside to see everybody working together. Like, yeah, everybody's so cool, and everybody's happy, and combining their strengths, and after this everybody will fight each other again, but whatever. For now, there are only two sides, one guy on one and everybody on the other.
So, I don't think if there's anyone else that's not on the Straw Hat side, like one dude who's just like, hey, can I still get a hand in that bounty for Luffy over here?
Well, you know, Pika and all the other officers and stuff, they're technically on Doflamingo's side, they're just, you know,
all conscious. Yeah. And possibly skewered by the birdcage. If this were another series, that's a real possibility, but it's One Piece, so they're all in a bunker underground until they can have a cover page series where you find out most of them open up like an ice cream shop or something.
Yeah. With the mole people.
Yeah. But great chapter. And Nick, I know we've been doing it for a while, but I think this week maybe we should actually mention what happens in Toriko this week.
Okay, Gourmet 325, Rampaging Direct Hit. This is largely what we are going to do in this arc chapter. Kuribo explains they're going after another, the fish dish they have to find, and it can be found in the Black Triangle, a black sea that consumes everything. Its pitch black waters are said to have snuffed out a meteorite as large as the moon without so much as a sound. But within this horrible ocean, there exists another, which, as it swims through it, it leaves behind a most beautiful river of stardust said to flow through that darkened world. So they can use this basically to track down another. And so they're like, okay, so how are we going to actually do that exactly? And Aimaru steps forward and says, check out this awesome globe that was developed by the IGO. It's got satellite images and stuff. And so they reproduce topographically in fine detail. And also, we can use this gourmet slime mold in order to find the exact path that we must take through the ocean in order to reach another, which is this. Blah. And they're like, oh my god, that's amazing. And Amaro also says, yeah, fungi are awesome. Also, there are some fungi that can have an effect on the brains of living things. There is one type of mushroom that can parasitize the heads of ants, taking over their nervous systems to control them. There is also a dark art that uses that ability in cooking. And it was like, a dark art that uses fungus. There's a dark art for everything, isn't there? So, Amara says, yes, I only discovered it because right before the festival, Pukin brought him to me. You mean, yes, exactly. Tornadoes are a fracking.
There's so many sound effects in Toriko, according to Nick.
I think it was... That's Jiro, right? I think.
Where? Tempe. That's Tepe's the one that they're referring to. But I really do hope it's exactly what Toriko mentioned before, and all these excuses they keep coming up with for why Tepe's not really evil or just bullshit. He's just an asshole.
I still don't like him. So all these tremendous tornadoes start buffeting their turtle blimp thing, and Kariba says, "Oh, they are mother tornadoes, tracks left behind long ago by one of the eight kings of Area 4, the Mother Snake, when she made her way across the Earth. These are the paths the tornadoes take." And so they say, "Okay, Dirigible Turtle, we must go by sea."
That'd be great if Sunny was just like, "Fucking Quinn doesn't make tornadoes when she moves. Fucking cheap-ass Mother Snake."
"You're useless to me." So they basically try to descend, but suddenly they realize that the sea is actually moving chunks of land around it. It's called the Revolving Islands of Area 6, also known as the Crazy Merry-Go-Land, because names in Toriko have to be weird. So they say, "Oh, we've got to do something. You know, if we don't make it, we're gonna die. If the Dirigible Turtle hits the sea before going into submersible mode, we'll be in trouble." And then suddenly they see that the islands have stopped, and so they manage to land on one of the islands, but a Wave Boy, which is literally a creature made of ocean, comes in and tries to attack them, and it tries to swallow them alive. But suddenly it is shocked by electricity from the sky, because Tengu. I don't know why I said Tepu. Whatever. Tengu, Brunch, you know, him. He shows up and he's like, "I shocked it because water." And also, Starjun is there.
Starjun's like, "I set it on fire because..."
Dot, dot, dot. Even more of the Wave Boys try to attack them, and then all of a sudden, a figure from a nearby small island attracts their attention. He's like, "Hey, come over here!" And it's this weird bearded guy with a straw hat and sunglasses on. And he is fishing, and he's got this weird thing called a gunfish sitting on shore next to him that's just blowing a weird drool bubble. And they're like, "Who are you?" And Gonzo says, "Are you Gigi, the gold chef?" And he's like, "Yes, I came to get you guys. Get up on the island." And that's where the chapter.
So, what did everybody think? Lisa, tell me your thoughts.
I'm intrigued that Starjun is back. He looks sad.
"What are you doing here?" "Waves are attack. Shut up."
He's like, "I just set the ocean on fire. Is that your first question? Really?" Yeah, I mean, I think it's okay. I'll have to see where this course goes. Toriko's world building has been sort of lost on me after, like, every arc has kind of just been, like, a crazy new thing after the other, so it's kind of having to see it in action as opposed to hearing about it, because a lot of the stuff, I feel like, is just almost there kind of superfluously. You know, how much of these tornadoes going to play a role, if any, etc.
Yep.
Alright, World Trigger.
World Trigger!
World Trigger!
World Trigger. With an awesome two-page color spread. That looks so
and the cover.
It did have the cover, where we got to see all of our characters running and eating.
Yay.
The color spread here, Nick, has been...
Well, only Jin was eating.
I thought all of them were eating.
No, just Jin.
No, just Jin.
That fucking fat ass. there's been some interesting topics of conversation about this cover page, because it is obviously the same position we've seen previous color spreads in, you know, with the four characters holding their tryon, or, you know, now it's their weapons. But an interesting thing was all the fish that are flying around here. And, you know, it was mentioned before, you know, what was his name? The leader of the Africa Tornadoes. What's it?
Irene.
That he had, you know, the you know, the trigger that made fish, you know, amongst other animals. But there was an interesting theory that was posted up in the forum, the One Piece forum that I do, by Tropical Blitz, and he was suggesting this might actually be a tease to something we'll be seeing in the future, because if you go back to when the invasion was first teased, way back when, they mentioned several different characters, or several different countries, and one of them was specifically noted to be a marine country.
Oh.
So maybe this is a tease to the fact that the next the invade after the, you know, this B rank wars arc finishes, their first away mission will be to that marine country.
That's a good theory.
I can dig it. I'd definitely be interested to see it. It's an awesome cover page, nonetheless.
I just think it looks cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I love his colors. I don't know why they just always look so awesome to me.
I like. I mean, you mentioned it before, but I like that it's like the same pose we've seen twice before. We saw it in the first chapter, we saw it in chapter 51. And it's the four of them just standing there, not really doing anything, but it just, the repetition is really cool. So we can expect the third anniversary, the four of them will be standing there unless somebody dies.
Please be Chica, please be Chica, please be Chica.
Now, I'm so sure that Jin's gonna die one of these days. His power is too convenient. Cool to
live, yeah. Maybe when they go to neighbor worlds, it stops working or something.
Alright, let's move on to the chapter proper. Chapter 104, Tamakoma Branch, Part 7. You start off with everyone just kind of chilling around Tamakoma.
Eating what looks like noodles, doilies, and Hershey chocolate bricks. What is that?
Reiji's not around, so nobody else can cook for them.
So they just threw, like, inanimate objects and shit together, like, here's food!
There's a Lego block in there someplace.
Who was the guy who kept on, who spilled all the sweet bits?
Tai Chi?
Yeah, he fucked up their food.
He's like, I'll cook for you guys, I'll cook for you!
Oh no, I dropped all of the actual nutritional stuff!
You ruined a perfectly good box of a bar of chocolate and a box of elbow noodles!
What were you even doing here? Your base is across town!
I got lost! I was trying to find the stupid hat store!
Oh, I love his stupid hat.
So Usami says, alright, you've done a good job. We've got 6 days until our next match, so, you know, but we can take our time to prepare until then. Today is Sunday, and it's important to take a break. And so Chika and Usami are just like, yeah, okay! Yay! Meanwhile, Yuma is going off with Not Maze Hughes. It says his name is Director Rindo, but he's Not Maze Hughes. who says that Kido wants to see Yuma about something. And so Osamu is like, oh, can I go too? Yeah, sure. But as they get into the car, they realize, oh, Husei's here. And Osamu's like, you know, I knew that he was kind of our prisoner and he was staying in the basement, but what is this? Are we going to like have some sort of prisoner exchange or something? And Not Maze Hughes says, everyone saw your match yesterday, including Husei. And he actually came up with the same plan as you guys, the flooding thing. So maybe you two actually think alike. Because it's like, we are completely different because my intent at the time would have been vastly different from you. So don't lump me together with this amateur.
That's far too much emotion. He is saying it in this, the most douchey, non-interested way possible.
Yeah,
like,
but Yuma says he's arrogant.
So yeah.
So he's like, man, what an arrogant prisoner, which is a good point.
He says it all while looking out the fucking window.
Since you're hauling me off to your headquarters, do you plan to force information out of me? And Not Maze Hughes, it's like, well, you know, don't feel obligated to Tamakoma. You know, you can answer the questions however you want. And he's like, well, yeah. What are you? Yeah. So he gets there, and he's immediately like, I will not answer any questions about my homeworld.
That is all. I think it'd be great if he just dropped, like he picked up a mic just to drop it at that point and just heads out.
So Kinoa kind of makes some threats towards him. He says, you know, we're not going to be lenient even with mere informants. We'll get rough with you when necessary because our world's laws don't apply to you neighbors. Presumably meaning, you know, we can torture you. So, fuck off.
I wanna make a note here. Yuma goes, in the next panel. But I wonder, like, I don't know if it's, well, he can tell he's lying, or if it's, neighbors, the laws don't apply to neighbors. Does that mean me too?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't think of the second angle of that.
I thought he might have been wondering exactly why Kunuta was being so aggressive towards him. So Shinoda says, oh, he's always so impatient, and we should treat this captive with more care, you know. Yuma, how do they treat captives on the other side? And Yuma says, well, you know, torture's not unheard of, but it's not very useful for getting information, because people will just say whatever comes to mind in order to get their captives to stop torturing them. So if you want to be effective, you have to torture a whole lot of people and compare their stories with each other. So torturing a single person, you would just be doing it out of spite, basically. So if you want to do that, that's fine. You know, you lost a lot of people. I understand if you're angry about it. And at that point, Kinuda goes, dot, dot, dot. So I think that that was what Yuma was thinking about. Basically saying, it's like, I know what you're really doing. You're just kind of angry, basically. And Kido then says, you're right about torture not being trustworthy if it's, or information not being, bleh. Information acquired through torture is indeed not trustworthy, but wouldn't you be able to separate the truth from the lies? And Osamu was taken aback by this because he didn't realize that Kido knew what Kuga's side effect was. So it's interesting exactly how he came by that information. So Shinoda says, alright, well, he introduced himself and he says to Husei, you know, we would like to treat you decently. You know, soldiers always follow orders from the top, and it would be illogical to only blame you for what this city endured. But I want to know something. We already know that your away team was not exactly, you know, it didn't have very good solidarity. You know, I saw with my own eyes that that wormhole woman killed the Black Tree user who infiltrated the base, referring to Emidora and Mira. And she spoke as if they actually planned to do that. And also, it seems like they were planning to leave you behind as well. So, if Dr. Krator abandoned you on purpose, why would you have to remain loyal to them? So, Husei gets kind of pissed off, and he says, going on an away mission means being prepared to die. And such trifles would never provoke even an ounce of information on my world. Although, Sniper Guy, Double Sniper Guy, other sniper guy.
That's Kikuchihara.
Right. From
That's the one you hate, isn't it?
Oh, man. Now that Ninomiya is in it, I don't hate Kikuchihara.
Because he's super mean to Osamu.
Yeah, because he's super... I only need one character I could hate in every series. Ninomiya is, like, a super douche, so... Kikuchihara is actually a little bit better.
He's from Kazama's squad.
Yes.
Right? Yes, he has the super hearing.
Right.
He's Daredevil, but with one sense.
So Shinoda says, okay, you know, that's enough. It seems that someone actually radios in. Oh, I think Kikuchihara might actually be communicating somehow about this.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Obviously, Kido's got an earpiece in. And someone is telling Kido there's no point in pushing him any further, but I'm not sure who exactly is saying that. But we can see that Kikuchihara actually overhears it. So. I don't know, it's weird. So Kido's like, okay, that's enough. You know, take him away, not Ace Use. And so they go off, and basically people kind of go down the hall in a bit of a stagger so that we get different conversations between people. And Kikuchihara talks with Osamu and says, you know, yesterday you were all both dependent on Kuga again. So, you know, what were you doing there? Were you just there to give orders to the cannon girl? You know, Tachikawa praised the plan to wait for Natsu's trying to run out, but you don't have much of a future if you can't score points yourself. And Osamu just says, yeah, that's what I think too. Douchebag.
He's trying to, maybe not help him, but he seems concerned. It's really, it's going to be put up or shut up the next match as to whether or not Chika and Osamu, if this development's going to go anywhere. Because this is not the first time we've had this conversation with Osamu where someone's been like, you know, Kuga got all the points, you need to prove himself. He's like, I agree. And the next match happens, the same sort of thing. And, you know, the same sort of things happen with Chika. The next match, it's tough because he had that before, didn't do anything last match. He's still thinking that now. And I'm like, the next match is going to be monumentally much more challenging for you.
They're not going to win if they do the same thing.
Well, it's not even the matter of they're not going to win. I have a hard time believing that Osamu and Chika have a chance in the next match, considering their opponents are at an even higher level than the ones before, and then they're going to have a fourth element in there, too, or third element, I guess, rather, in their case. So, I don't know. I don't mean it in, like, an unbelievable sense. I mean, like, as a reader invested in the story, I'm like, I don't know how Osamu can possibly, like, manage to come out ahead in this. I thought last match was, like, his chance to show he had some. So I'm kind of interested to see how they're going to manage that. But we're kind of diverting from the B-rank wars right now, at least with this chapter.
So Yuma talks with Kinuda about what happened as well. And he says, you know, Kido backed off pretty easily, and I kind of thought he would be, you know, make more demands. And Kinuda says, well, I would have liked to tear him limb from limb before Eyes There blew the secret on the way mission, so that's not an option anymore. So that was what the deal with Not Maze Hughes was. You know, we left the neighbor with Tamakoma in exchange for your help. And that, of course, piques Yuma's curiosity. And Osama also hears this. Because, like, okay, so they passed over Husei, the only source of information they have on Afto Krator. What are they planning to use Kuga for? So. And we then get to find out, it seems, because Kinuda says to someone operating something, wake him up. And we see there is a... Is it just a black rad? Is he cut off from saying something?
Whatever. No, it's one just of the neighbors. A black rad.
And it's hooked into a wall. And so the operator says, okay, infusing Tryon now.
I like the fat operator.
Infusing Tryon.
It's like the second time we've seen a male operator in the series, and he's just a big fat dude.
So the black rat comes.
He's like, all the other operators are rather thin women, so they had to make a special uniform for me.
I don't actually get to direct a team. I'm just a secretary.
I just load monster AIs into robots.
So the black rat comes to life, its eye opens up, its legs and horns sprout out, and it says, well, you finally came! You're late, meeting monkeys!
Yay!
No, World Trigger next week!
Who do you think it is?
I don't fucking know.
What are you talking about, Nick? It's obvious who it is. Only one character screamed meeting monkeys at everybody.
Right, so somehow they managed to save Emidora's life and put him inside this little robot, I guess.
I guess what they did is they took his Tryon, and that's what's getting infused.
Which is like weird.
It carries, I guess, his personality and mindset, but his physical body is worthless, I guess, at this point.
It might be somehow related to his black trigger, too, because it, you know, caused his whole body to morph and stuff.
So they took his trigger.
I know, but maybe it affected his body in such a way that they were able to do that. I don't know. I guess they could also, or maybe they somehow used the same technology, you know, that cubified people.
Possibly.
Yeah.
What's your theory, Annalise? Because you're the expert on this.
I think it has something to do with his the horns. Because I think at one point they said that they can get a lot of information from the horns. But it's kind of weird that the horns aren't on the rad originally, and they kind of appear.
They grow out, yeah.
So I'm not really sure, but I'm so happy he's back, because I kept telling Hope, the previous World Trigger editor, like, Enidora isn't dead, he's not dead, he's gonna come back, somehow he's alive, he's in the basement or something.
Made it, monkeys!
So we were both very, very excited that he's... alive in a way. He can be a dick again. Yay!
And he's bound to a spider monster.
I want him to be
totally a good idea.
I want him to be the new secondary mascot for Tamakoma. Somebody said in the chat, like, he's our new Replica. It's like, yeah, that's a good idea. Until Replica comes back, because he's totally coming back.
What, is no one in World Trigger dead?
No, Yuma's dad is totally dead.
Yeah, I mean, backstory characters could be dead, but yeah.
Mima's sister? Everybody else has
survived except for the... Well, no, they did say that some of the people in the organization are dead.
Yeah, some of the scientists or engineers.
And there was controversy over that, because they were like, you know, we agreed to this, and, you know, the people who joined up with your organization have been captured / killed and stuff. So.
I guess there's just some people who will die and never come back, and some who will.
Yeah, like Unohana.
Boosh.
Ouch.
I don't know if I remember that last week. Oh well. Because we spent so little time on Bleach, so I don't know. Anyway, we have something very important to get to now that we're done with recap.
Yes, now, we do.
I want to address two things. One, Annalisa, you have never seen what Chris has written for you.
No, I'm so nervous.
Blind read. Okay. Secondly, I hope you understand that as the editor and translator of World Trigger, if you read this, it will be canon.
Well, I'm not the editor or the translator.
Oh, fuck.
She's the letterer.
Just the letterer. And I have to say that I'm not reading this as the letterer because I don't want to get in trouble with this.
So this is being read by Anna Liza Christimen.
This is being read by someone who may or may not even be in this room. This could be a fourth person who just entered this call.
It's a ghost camel.
You're just the leader of the Osamu fan club. That's all.
Yes, everybody should join.
Okay, why won't it let me post this?
I want to point out that I have also never seen slash written.
Why are you being like this?
I'm just like you, listeners at home.
Hold on.
Just paste it in the chat.
I'm trying to. It won't let me.
Can you email it to me?
Yeah, it won't let me, like, I don't know, maybe it's too long. Maybe Skype's like, no, what are you doing? You can't do this. Yeah, here, I can email it to you. Just shoot me your, actually, I think I have your email. I think. I do, yes, I think it's Sid. The Gmail?
Yes.
Okay. Alright, so, I'll just put world T. Okay. So, this has been sent to you. I told you before, there's a cue that's a stage direction. It's the bold line. You'll see it. It's like eight or so lines down. Just, like, leave a pause there. But for those of you who are in the chat, be forewarned right now. This is definitely not safe for work. I mean, beyond the fact this entire podcast wasn't.
This is especially.
Yeah, what you're going to hear is going to contain a lot of vulgarity. It's going to contain a lot of insanity. So, everybody, just be forewarned about that ahead of time, and I hope you enjoy this. So
this is going past our usual M rating to probably an X, honestly. Yes.
It maybe isn't that bad.
It's very close.
Unless Decency has something there. Do you have the email?
I got the email.
Okay. All right. So, hold on. This, everybody, is The World Trigger to My Heart and Back Door, Part 17.5, #, Episode 3, anewhope.exe.
War. War never changes. Winter is coming. The Marleys were dead to begin with. And other ominous lines to set up the start of this darker installment of the fanfiction. Because if the Sam Raimi Spider-Man films taught me anything, it's that the third movie in your trilogy needs to be angsty and emo. And thus, our story begins with B-rank border agent Osamu Mikumo standing at the edge of a massive precipice with a sullen look in his eyes. If you were capable of growing facial hair, you would probably have a thick beard of depression. And if you can drink anything other than Sunny Delight without getting a hangover, he'd probably be drunk right now, too. He gazed off into the ocean in front of him, reminiscing over his lost love from when... his lost love when from behind came John Locke from Lost. You're going to jump? I'd recommend against it. The world needs men like you. Squiggly something another. Look, I've forgotten your name, but the point is, people like you make the rest of us feel better by comparison. Thanks for trying to cheer me up, Locke, but I'm not going to jump. I'm just sort of feeling alone now that she's gone. Ah, yeah. I went through a phase like that too when I was 12. I listened to a lot of crappy rock, Story of the Year, Papa Roach, Sum 41, all those queefy bands. I actually still listen to Breaking Benjamin. What, really? Wow. I'm stunned any woman had sex with you after hearing that. Well, that and your seemingly negative amount of masculinity. Hey, I'm a tough customer. Osamu replied, stomping his foot into a flower until the flower pushed back too much and toppled him over. Owzers! quite. So tell me what happened, Dark Miss Prime. How did your heart break? Kitora decided that having air sex with Zapdos was more important than having an emotional relationship. Well, that's not surprising. Bitches love air sex. Locke, you really shouldn't refer to women as bitches. It's pretty derogatory. Pugh, use a bitch too! Look, you got two options here. Either you nut up and go after the woman you love, or you do nothing, and in the next 10 minutes this fanfic will be Chris singing 80s sitcom theme songs as Furious Mingy. I don't care which one you choose. Either one, I'm gonna go home to finger blast your mom. Thanks, Locke. You always know just what to say.
I thought
smell you later.
That wasn't actually his mom. Does Locke still think that Furious Mingy is Osamu's mom?
Maybe.
He has no right to criticize Osamu.
Smell you later, bitch tits. Locke took off on his jetpack, powered by awesome, leaving Osamu to make the most important decision of his life. In his mind, there is only one real option.
You take the good, you take the bad, you take it both, and there you have the facts of life, dude, the facts of life!
No! Osamu actually did find the courage to go after Kitora, traveling to the grand evil castle where Zapdos lives. It's an intimidating sight, like a hollow bastion in Kingdom Hearts 1 before it got all lame in the sequel with all those desu-desu Final Fantasy characters running around, opening ice cream shops and shit. To even enter the castle would test Osamu to his limits in mind, body, spirit, and sexual prowess. But that sounds like a lot to write, so, Zapdos leaves the key under the welcome mat. Yeah. Zapdos! Osamu shouted as he burst through the doors. He quickly doubled over to catch his breath. Those really heavy doors. Osamu! The dorky hero looked up to see his beloved Kitora shackled to a table wearing nothing but socks. Because, as already established last time, it's super hot when a girl's only wearing socks and nothing else. Oh yeah, giggity. Alright, the story. Kitora, what has that sick, twisted, jerky jerk done to you? Given me the best sex of my life? I'm a consenting adult here. Just because you don't like anything more thrilling than missionary doesn't mean the rest of us don't. That's not fair! I'm totally adventurous! That's why you cried last time we tried reverse cowgirl? No, I told you! I watched Toy Story 2 earlier in the day, and I was very emotional! Toy Story 2 isn't even the sad Toy Story! Well, it seems like the young lady has made up her mind. From the ceiling descended the mythical thunderbird Pokemon Zapdos. But
Zapdos can talk?
Yes!
But since this is an epic third-part narrative and he's the antagonist, he's more of an extreme version of Zapdos with an evil goatee, a monocle, one black angel wing behind the wings he already has, and a sash that reads, Evil Sex Baron. Perhaps it's time for you to run home and vent your frustrations with your stuffed animals. Then he laughed like an evil, posh British person would. Hey! My sessions with Dr. Stuffums are private and not scheduled for another 2 weeks! I'm here to win my girlfriend back! The Osamu pulled out his ray geist and activated a long stream of Trion, manifesting into a brilliant blade. Let's do this! What? You're gonna kill me? Because your ex-girlfriend decided of her own free will to leave you and start up a relationship with me? That's kind of fucked up, dude. Besides, isn't the idea of a man coming in to reclaim his woman rather archaic? Women should have agency too, you know. Not everyone is Sakura. Osamu frowned and put away his trigger. Oh, jeez. You're right. I'm sorry, Kitora, for treating you like a reward to be earned rather than an actual person with agency of your own. That was very, very wrong of me. We're supposed to be a smarter, more open-minded generation, and here I am being caught up in some ultra-masculine mindset that has no place in today's society. Can you ever forgive me? Huh? What? Do what now? In the past few minutes, Kitora had grown bored and severed most of her limbs to escape her binding so that she could read smutty magazines using her stumps. Oh yeah, the death match! Yeah, sure, you guys could go kill each other over me. That actually sounds pretty hot. I'm making panty soup over here just thinking about it.
Oh, God!
Score! Osamu cried, quickly activating his ray gust again, thrusting it into the air. Yoink! Before Zapdos could react. Osamu's Trion blade ripped right through him, tearing him apart like that super disappointing episode of Digimon where War Grandma one-shot Machine Dramon after just 2 episodes, even though Puppetmon had like a half season to himself. That was
Yeah, what the fuck was
shit.
That?
I mean, seriously! Machine Dramon just looks so much cooler! the only thing worthwhile in Puppet Mons arc is that stupid tree that had that bad Marlon Brando impersonation in the dub. Oh, where was I? Alright, the fanfic. Lame.
I didn't think he would say it like a sassy gay man.
He's become sassy gay, I'm sorry. Zapdos roared as he began to dematerialize. Before long, nothing remained of mythical Thunderbird Pokemon except his super sweet cast on all his sex dungeon gear. Kitora, with all her legs somehow returned, ran up and embraced Usami. And remember, she's totally naked except for socks. Wait, no. She just has socks, a New York Giants jersey, because that sounds even hotter. Go Giants! Oh, Osamu, after three straight days of gets my brain...
I think that was a mistake.
Okay. Oh, Osamu, after three straight days of getting my brains fucked out of my head, I realized something. Relationships are about more than sex. Sure, it's nice to get the whole ground pound into fudge down, but that's not really love, you know? Love is about, I don't know, poetry and bullshit. Fuck, what am I, Nicholas Sparks? Just give me that dick, you big, stupid cocksucker. Yes, ma'am! And thus, the two did fornicate, loud and wild. The castle walls echoed with their impassioned cries of sex. Somewhere in the basement, there's an epic-level Kraken, already annoyed that he got cut out of the fanfiction for time, who is now extra pissed that their sexual screaming is keeping them up. But fuck that Kraken. The end? Mid-credits scene.
Question mark?
In a darkened chamber, the form of Zapdos exploded into existence, the crackle of vile magic. What? Where am I? I should be dead. And you would be, if we did not still have a use for you. A hooded figure stood behind the fallen Thunderbird, enigmatic and imposing. You are still vital to our plans to take over the world, despite your pathetic failure. I'll get that four-eyed geek next time! I'm like the 45th best legendary Pokemon, goddammit! I'm right after one of those stupid elf Pokemon for the fourth generation that nobody likes! No, you had your chance. We cannot afford another setback. So I found somebody far more capable for the task. Wouldn't you agree? From the shadows came a tiny figure! No larger than a couple feet tall, with a pink tail swinging out beneath his robe. Frosh thinks so too!
Ah!
The killer cat said, with a blood-soaked smile.
Do-do-do-do-do! But wait! There's a super end credit scene that I kept just to myself! Meanwhile, in Locke and Mama Mikamo's room. Oh, John Locke, you got so much try on, and you're such a great character if you ignore all the dumb shit you did in the first couple seasons. Oh yeah, bite my clit harder. Harder! Harder! Oh no, that's too hard. And the harder I get... Oh no, I've just been stabbed by some mysterious cloaked figure who's now gone. Oh no, I'm dying. Locke, before I die... First, you better still finish. I got a couple moments of warmth left, and you using them. We don't waste body heat in this house. Also, you tell my son that I always only wanted him to give me grandchildren. Then he could go fuck off and die for all I care. This is probably his fault, too. Stupid white boy. I dang.
Well, that was...
Oh, my God.
And that was World Trigger to My Heart and Backdoor, part 17 and a half, #, episode 3 of New Hope.exe.
That was fantastic. I'm ready for part 4.
Oh, wow. I thought you'd be turned off at least slightly by that.
Well, you set it up for, you know, another part, clearly.
The funny thing is, I actually have an idea for it, and I guess I can't say it because it'll spoil into it, but I don't know, I just find it so funny at the end. It's like ferocious and evil, sadistic, murdering cat. So, what did you think, Nick?
Well, you've done it again, Chris.
There wasn't as much filthy sex in this one, but that's because this is really developing the story of Trigger to My Heart and Back Door, I feel.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
This was more of a character development piece.
Uh-huh. I get the next one. Okay. And on that note... Bye.
Wait, no, we have to... Isn't there, like, a send-off we have to do?
Do we?
Yeah.
After that, do you really... Are you really gonna stick around for the send-off? Seriously? Okay. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this. For those of you who joined us on twitch.tv/ReloadC for the recording, thank you very much to you. We record the show Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, usually, though sometimes we do need to change it up, so make sure to follow us on Twitter. He is at ReloadC and I am at YRulerOfTime. Be sure to check out our past episodes over on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com or on iTunes. Just search for Weekly Manga Recap, where you can leave us a rating or a view to help us to beat the woodworking podcasts that we are sadly categorized alongside.
Special shout out to Some Dude on a Computer for our 5-star reviews, as I've been listening to these two for almost 2 years now, and I have to say, they host the best manga podcast I find. I like this podcast so much, I've broken my 5-year boycott of iTunes just to write this review. They are that entertained. So thank you very much, Some Dude on a Computer. We greatly appreciate it.
Awesome. Also, be sure to send us criticism, questions, and suggestions for future manga for us to read, either in the comments section or email them to us. weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com is the best place to do that. Special thanks go out to Steve Mann, our title card, as you can check out his work. DeviantArt is Neurotic Fanboy. Tumblr is I Draw Boobs. Patreon is Steve Mann. And special thanks also go out to The Infamous Planet and Felix Dark 2 for creating the visual editions of our podcast. Quite recently, The Infamous Planet did the first two World Triggers to My Heart and Back Door, so check out those two if you haven't already, and I'm sure the third one will not be too far away. Next week, we will have Onani Master Kurosawa, I think, so be sure to join us then. Meanwhile, thank you very much to Annalisa, whom you can also follow on Twitter, at Kaito Ace. That's KAITOU_Ace. And she does all sorts of stuff on Shonen Jump, so thank you for all that stuff.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And do not forget, you need to message her as well if you are a fan of World Trigger and you are not already a part of the Osamu Mukamu fan club. How many members are we at this point?
52.
52.
And like 20 of those came from right after last time I was on this podcast. So
you guys WMR are awesome. Boost. Yeah, nice.
I want to hear about 30 people now agreeing to join the club. It's great, guys. You get a fan card. You get to know that you're part of community. The member dues are relatively cheap. I thought my firstborn was maybe a little too much, but for Osamu, there's nothing too expensive. Yeah. Well, there's also the lavish Hawaii trip we take each year too. So
that's pretty great. That's
yeah.
Pretty.
I haven't gotten my plane ticket though. Should I be worried about that?
No, I think you should be okay. I think you should be more worried about the reenactments of your fan fictions that we're going to put off.
That someone's going to be bound to a fucking slab before they cut off their limbs so they can read smutty fan fucking magazines?
Oh, yes, definitely. It's all planned out. It's going to be excellent.
Man, that sounds awesome.
So join the club, everybody!
Definitely, make sure you do that, guys. And I think that's it. I don't know where we... What was your favorite joke, Nick?
Yeah.
Aww.
It's...
Nick's like, I was too busy jerking.
It's all blur at this point, man.
Oh. I was particularly proud. I don't know why. There's always, when I write something, there's always one joke I find but way funnier than anyone else probably does. But I don't know. I left like 20 minutes. I was very emotional. I watched Toy Story 2 the other day. And she's like, that's not even the sad Toy Story!
There's that one song sequence with Jesse where she gets abandoned. That's pretty sad.
Yeah, but in comparison to 3 where they're holding hands falling into a furnace, like, you're like, come on! Alright, well, I guess that's it, guys. Have a good one, everybody.
Yep, bye, everyone. Bye. We'll catch you next time. Hopefully you'll be a little bit more sane.